Thank you, Leroy, for those words. Who is your neighbor? Depends who you talk to. So I'm here with I-58, representing I-58. I spent time in Greece. Here to talk about refugees. How many of you know what a refugee is? Can you put your hand up? Either, say about half. Some of you are maybe too shy to put your hand up. That's okay. Is this a new thing? Are refugees a new thing? No, they're not. We go back in Scripture. We go back to Abraham. He was a refugee. He left his country. God told him to leave. He was searching. He left his country searching for a place, not knowing where he went. Several others in the Old Testament. Jesus, he was a refugee. He got kicked out of his country where he was raised in. At 2 years old, he had to flee because the king wanted him killed. Right? Refugees are people that leave their country because of disaster, famine, could be kind of anything, really. That's not a safe place to be. I'm going to be talking about I-58 and the work that we do. This is not only about I-58. There are many other organizations that have been working with us to get to the point where we're at now. And it's all because of Jesus Christ. We did not build this on ourselves, on our own. I feel like God has given us this opportunity to, at this time in life, to speak to the Muslim world, Muslim culture. So I will give a little bit of background to I-58, how we started. We chose the name because of Isaiah 58. I was in Greece in 2015. That is when the refugees really started coming into Europe from Africa, from Asia, the Middle East. The summer of the fall of 2015 was probably the peak. There were up to 10,000 refugees coming to a small island a day. That's the island right there. Turkey is to the right of it. And that island is about the closest island to Turkey. So you have Europe, Greece is a part of Europe, and Turkey is not a part of Europe. So once the refugees cross international water lines, the European Union is by law required to take them in as asylum seekers. So their focus as a refugee is just to get across. So we are working on the island of Lesbos. I was there in 2015, as I said. I should maybe introduce myself first. So my name is Joe Esch. I'm here with my wife and two small children. Grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania here, pretty local. So it's a little bit about me. I'm also part of the I-58 board. So 2015, we went there with a team in December, spent about 2 weeks there, and saw what was happening. So there were people coming across on these small rubber boats, inflatable raft type things. They were probably about 30 feet long and maybe about 8 feet wide. And they would put about 70 people in those boats. Overcrowded, Many, many people drowned. In 2015 alone, there were over 3,000 refugees that drowned just in that 5-mile crossing. Due to the overcrowded boats, the smugglers would put them in the boats at gunpoint, send them away. Many of them had no clue how to drive a boat. They had these little engines on the back. Many of them ran out of gas halfway across, and they had no idea. Some of them had never seen that much water in their life, and they were freaked out. So they would come across to arrive on the shore in Lesbos, the island. And sometimes we would go down there and help them get from the boat to the dry land and give them a blanket, some warm, dry clothes. Many of them were wet from the crossing. And then we would take them to a camp which was about a mile off the shore. And there we would give them a little bit of snack, food to eat, and they would wait in line for a bus to take them to the next camp. That was the process back then in 2015. It didn't work so well, but that's what they had. And we needed volunteers, so we jumped in and helped out there. During our time there, there was a camp that we heard about called Moria Camp. You can go online and type in Moria Camp 2015. You'll see pictures of this camp. It's an old military prison with piles of trash 12 feet high, water bottles laying everywhere, diapers everywhere, human waste, you name it, it was there. And these people would come through this camp and sleep there for a couple nights. Many of them would sleep outside in the open. They had nothing to sleep under. So we heard about this camp, and we heard that you couldn't get in as a volunteer. It was a government-run camp. Only the police and the military were allowed to be in there. So we started praying, and we asked God to open the doors. We saw that it was a disaster. They needed help in there. So we started praying as a team and asking God to open the doors for us to get in there. It wasn't long. We decided to take a trip. It was on the opposite side of the island that we were based at. So we drove about an hour and a half to get to Moria. This camp was where all the refugees would go through this camp to get registered. It was the only registration camp on the island. So we headed out, and we decided we're going to take a bunch of tea and pass it out. It was cold. So we got there in the evening, had a whole bunch of tea, like, I don't know, probably 40 gallons of tea or something like that. And parked there, and we found out that there was like another camp outside of the camp itself. So Moria is an old prison, so it's got the gates, it's got the wire and everything. Outside of that, there was another camp that was just out in the open. So we said, hey, this is perfect opportunity. Let's go pass out tea to these people. We can't get inside, so let's do it here. So we started doing that, and as we did that, we tried to find people that could speak a little bit of English and engage in conversation, ask them where they come from, just kind of care for them. At that time, they would only stay in that camp or at that place for 3 or 4 days. It wasn't very long. And then they would move on and go to Athens eventually. So that's what we did. That was our first introduction to that camp. We saw it was a mess inside. We brought tea several times outside. Somehow, a person on the inside of the camp contacted one of our volunteers and said, hey, you guys want to come in camp and help us? We're like, yes, we do. We've been praying for this. And they're like, what do you want help with? And they're like, we need someone to clean the bathrooms. Well, that's not really what we had envisioned as we were praying. But we're like, hey, this is an opportunity to get into this camp. Let's give it a try. So we got about a group of maybe 25 volunteers together, and we went in there one day. They let us in, and we started cleaning toilets. And the camp is on about 4 acres, and it can hold about 2,000 people. There were thousands and thousands of refugees coming through that camp every day. Right now, in that camp, there's between five and 6,000 refugees. So it's overcrowded. And back then, there were even more going through the camp. Now imagine that much traffic over 6 months in these rooms, in this place that was meant for 2,000 people. It was disgusting, nasty. We went in there, and there was a section they had us do where it was so bad the refugees didn't even sleep in there. The sewage was backed up, and terrible. But we got it cleaned up and scrubbed the walls, scrubbed the floors, disinfected everything as best as we could, tried to get some of the plumbing fixed, things like that, and went out, and we kept bringing tea, but we made a contact through that. There was one person that made a contact through that whole process, and they asked us to come back again and clean more toilets. So we're like, hey, whatever. This is our way into camp. We're gonna do whatever it takes. So we clean more toilets. We clean more rooms, and through that all, God was opening the door for us, and it was really amazing. By the time second or third time we went there, we were able to walk in and out of the camp freely, without anybody checking us out or stopping us, without the police making sure you guys got your badges or anything. It was really amazing what God did through that. We obeyed. We asked God for something, and we stepped out in obedience to that. And the fruit has been incredible from that. You might not always enjoy stepping out in obedience, but there's a time for it. There's always a time for obedience. So through that, we were able to establish kind of a section in the camp where we kind of controlled it. Just a small section. We were like, hey, this is the best. So if we can keep this section of camp clean, we can let the families and vulnerable women sleep in this place. We can keep it safe. We can keep it clean. Let's try that. So we did that for a while, and we called that the family compound. So that eventually grew, and we got more volunteers. Other organizations came in to help us in the camp, kind of grew from that. And now we are working alongside of another organization called Your Relief. They are a Greek organization. One of their men is basically runs the whole camp. He's kind of the top guy in the camp. There's police and military forces there that help us, work with us as well. But I had never dreamed of going into a camp like that and being able to become a leader in a camp like that. It was amazing. That's a little bit of the background, the history. I wasn't the only one involved. There were many other friends and family that also were there at the time working together to get this thing rolling. And my dad was over there as well. He caught a vision from Isaiah 60. I'll read just a few verses from that. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. And nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. What is the your and you? Who is that talking about? Anybody want to take a guess? It's the church. He's talking to the church. He said, arise, shine, church, for your light has come. Do we say we have light? We sing this little song, this little light of mine. We have light. And he said, arise and shine that light. There is darkness, thick darkness, over the people and over the land. But we have the light as a church. Let's rise up and shine that light. So my dad got a hold of this, and he caught a vision. And he said, we need to do something about this. There is so much opportunity here as we serve. And as we work in this camp, the refugees are watching us. They see how we respond or react to a situation. And they're watching very, very closely. And eventually, they'll come up to you and say, what's different about you? That's a perfect opportunity to share the gospel. And it happens again and again and again. That's a little bit of how we got started. So this is kind of where they're all coming from, all the refugees. You got Afghanistan, even Pakistan, even farther out to the right. We've had people from Bangladesh. I've met people from so many different places. I'm like, why in the world are you here? And they're like, oh, well, I just want to go into Europe. I want a job. Things like that. Some of them are just there for the ride. Most of them are not. You got quite a few Africans coming. Yeah, a lot of different places. This is a drawing. A refugee drew this. Might be hard for you to see. So he's from Syria. He left in 2013. Spent $1,500 at the border, probably paid someone off so they can get through the border. Went to Iraq, Kurdistan, up in Turkey. They got stuck in prison, detention. I don't know how long. It looks like there's several people in there. It looks like a family, actually. You got three children, the mom and dad. I don't know if that's the actual person that drew this. But they got stuck in detention for 15 days. And they had to pay $800. Somewhere along the line, they had to pay $150 more. Then they put 60 people in this boat, this little rubber inflatable raft boat. And there it says they paid 4,000 euros per person. 4,000 euros, that's about $2,800, maybe 3,000. About $2,800 per person. Now, if you're a smuggler, you got a good business going. Rich, quick. But that's how desperate they are. They want to get across. They want freedom. They're leaving everything behind. A few statistics. We are now witnessing the highest levels of displacement on record. An unprecedented 65.3 million people around the world have been forced from their home. 65 million people. We can't even comprehend that. Even as Joseph Stalin said, one man's death is a tragedy. a million is a statistic. How do you feel that? This is a statistic. Among them are nearly 21.3 million refugees, over half of whom are under the age of 18. Minors. In a world where nearly 34,000 people are forcibly displaced every day as a result of conflict or persecution. These numbers are staggering. We have no idea what it's like. I can't even comprehend this. Over 5 million refugees have fled Syria since 2011, seeking safety in Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, Egypt, and beyond. Turkey hosts over 2.9 million registered 2.9 million registered Syrians. The majority of them live in urban areas, with around 260,000 accommodated in the 21 government-run refugee camps. You can find all this stuff online. Just do image searches and go and type in refugee camps. The largest refugee camp is in Jordan. I believe there's 800,000 refugees there. Massive camp. The opportunity is not only in Greece. There's many other countries you can go to and find refugees. This man, I'm going to go into a little bit of how this thing kind of whole started, where it kind of came from. This man in 2010 lit himself on fire in protest of the government coming and taking his food stand. How many of you have heard about that? A few. This kind of sparked what they call the Arab Spring. This man, he was a regular man. He went to the street one day with his fruit stand, and the police said, "You can't be here today," and took all of his stuff and took him into basically just took everything and said, "You can't do this anymore." Communist governments, that's what they do. They just do whatever they want. So, in protest of that, he goes and lights himself on fire and dies. Through that started a spark in the Arab world where the young people rebelled against their governments. Their governments in authority who oppressed them for 30, 40 years, dictators. Who oppressed them for many, many years. They are tired of it. They are sick and tired of it. And so this starts, and everybody's like, all the young people are like, "Hey, let's get on board. We can protest against the government. Let's do something about this." So that kind of started the whole Arab Spring and refugees coming to Europe and that whole thing. Egypt, January 2011. I was actually in Egypt. At this time, I was in Tahrir Square where there were protests going on. It was scary. Thousands and 10, 20,000 people in the town yelling to bloody murder against their leader. After mass protests in Egypt and a popular uprising in Tunisia, that ousted its longtime leader, thousands of Yemenis demonstrated in the capital of Sana'a, calling on Ali Abdullah, president for more than 30 years, to step down. A major demonstration of over 16,000 protesters took place on January 27th in Yemen's capital. By this time, they're figuring out that if they want to, they can rally together and take down their government. Algeria. Many of the countries, the same things happening. Lebanon, Libya, Syria, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Morocco, Jordan, Oman, Kuwait. Syria in 2010 was among the top 10 safest countries in the world. A woman could drive her car across the country without any fear. In 2011, within a year, it was among the top 3 worst, unsafest place to be in the world. Tell me how that happens. Do you think God is doing something? We believe in God's sovereignty. What is He doing? So as these protests and uprising, the Arab Spring was happening, there started a civil war in Syria. And this was, most of it was, it started out as protests against the government, eventually split off into different, many different people, rebel groups split off, kept splitting off from each other, fighting other people, and major civil war, and out of that came ISIS, which we know today is pretty powerful. The news says that we got them under control, they're all taken care of. I don't believe any of that. I believe they're still alive and thriving. Well, the thing is, ISIS goes and kills people in the name of their God, and they claim to be Islamists, Muslims. They're radical Muslims. So tell me how that works. If a Muslim person is leaving their country because of another Muslim man killing him, that's not going to survive. A house divided against itself will not survive. So they all are leaving, and because they're being kicked out by one of the reasons there's so much openness is because they're being kicked out by their own religion. They come to the island with open hearts, open minds. They're coming out from under the oppression that they've been under for 40 years. And they're asking questions. Many of them have dreams. Many stories that I've heard from refugees recently. I know sometimes we think these stories are out there on the mission field. This is a mission field, but they're hard to believe. This one man, one woman, she had a dream that this man on a white horse came down and talked to her. And she came to Greece, and she started talking about this. And so we said, hey, that's Jesus. And she said, I want to know him. I want to know that man. And we're able to lead her to Christ. Why we chose I-58? Isaiah 58. Is this not the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him, and hide not yourself from your own flesh. A few verses later, this is the promise. If we do these things, then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, here I am. How many of us call upon the Lord? I call upon the Lord a lot. Does he hear your cry? Does he say, here I am? If he doesn't, maybe there's a problem. Maybe we got to go back to this, to share your bread with the hungry. Bring to your house those who are cast out and poor. When you see the naked, that you cover him and hide not yourself from your own flesh. Can you do that right here in Myerstown? I think so. You don't have to go to Greece to do that. You can do that right here. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. You shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Incredible promises that we have. What are we involved in? We have the Oasis. This is a community center that we have. It's open from 11 a.m. in the morning to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. That is where place where we anyone can come in, the refugees can come in. It's right across from another camp. It's not across from Moria, but it's across from another camp that we're close by. There we are free to share the gospel. The purpose of the Oasis is to bring, is to create a safe place. We give them some snacks and tea and a little bit of food. And they come and sit down. They sit down on the floor. That's their culture. Get down on the floor and we talk. Have conversations. We have translators that work with us as well. So that helps with the language barrier. This is where we need older couples. I see a few older couples here. What's your retirement plan? God has called you to arise and shine. And here's an opportunity to arise and shine. You get to hear their stories of how they walked for 20 days across the mountains of Afghanistan in the bitter cold as it snowed without any food. Not knowing when somebody's going to come out and jump them and take everything they have. It happens. Many times, each one of them has a story to tell. And this is the place where we sit down and listen to their story and feel for them, feel their pain, and are able to speak life. And we're able to share our testimony with them. We have the light of Christ. We also have a church service in there, Sunday mornings. It's not a very big room. Maybe a 3/4 of this size. And we pack it out. We put 200 people in there, all sitting on the floor. Most, probably half of them are refugees that come to that. There's quite a few volunteers, but there's also a lot of refugees that come to that church service. We also have a women's ministry ministering to the vulnerable women. There is an incredible amount of trafficking going on in this type of situation. I wasn't, 5 years ago, I was not aware of trafficking situations. Came to Greece, became a little bit more aware of it, and now there's quite a few more people involved in helping the women to bring them out, bring them to a safe house where you can talk and you can trust them. Trafficking is happening right here in this town, this city. Route 30, that's a major hub. It's scary. This stuff is happening right under our feet. And we don't even know about it. It's sad. But we have the light. God has called you to rise up and shine that light. This is the camp. We serve tea sometimes. The top right is in, that was when I was there a year ago. My wife and I were there a year ago for 3 months. We worked in the Oasis. We got about 5 or 6 inches of snow. The locals said that they hadn't seen snow like that in 40 years. I don't know if it's true or not. I can kind of believe it. But it was crazy. Look at them. They're sleeping in these tents. The refugees are sleeping in the tents, covered with these tarps. It's like they're out camping for a year. It's not fun. Very poor conditions. The bottom right is also a picture of the camp. How can you get involved? You can pray. Pray for emotional strength for the volunteers. It is very, very emotionally draining to sit there and listen to someone tell their story of how they've come from a place. I've got two friends in camp, two young guys. They're brothers. The one was 10 years old, the older one was 12 years old. They were walking home from school one day, and they found out that someone blew up their parents' vehicle, a suicide bomb. Killed both their parents. They were the only two siblings, 10 and 12 years old. What do? I believe it was their uncle took them in for a while. Wasn't the greatest situation, wasn't very healthy. The kids were not taken care of very well. They roamed the streets. They ended up in camp. None of us know what it's like to lose parents in that way because of war. I can sit there and listen to their stories. How do you comfort them? What do you say to them? I don't know. It's hard. So, our volunteers need a lot of prayer and they need a lot of emotional strength. Pray for them in that. God's power would be known. It's our desire for us to see miracles happen there. There have been many miracles. People have been transformed. There's this one lady that was in camp. Called her the dog lady. She's an older single lady, guessing maybe 30, 40 years old. She would not leave her dog. She had a German Shepherd. She brought the German Shepherd in the boat across the water, paid for it. She wouldn't leave the dog, ever. And she was not nice to deal with in camp. Nobody really liked her. She was very hard. Somehow through it all, she found out about a Bible study, started going to the Bible studies, ended up getting delivered. Powerful, totally transformed. And then she comes and sits up front in our church services, worshiping God, crying, tears coming down her face. That breaks my heart to see that, how God can transform a person like that. We want God's power to be known. It's not about us. I have nothing to give. It's only Jesus Christ. Spiritual protection over the new believers. How can you help? You can help cover the cost for building rentals. We rent the Oasis. We are looking into getting a bigger facility for the Oasis. It's not the Oasis that we have now. The building is pretty small. We're limited. We would like to expand it and make it bigger. So we need funds for that. Also need funds for food, other costs like that. So if you want to volunteer, We have 1 to 3 months. We're limited to 3 months because of the visa situation. We have not been able to obtain longer term visas at this point. There are people staying and in the past have been getting visa extensions. They're saying that's now no more, that's not available anymore. So therefore we can only be there 1 to 3 months. We send 1 month teams every month, about 15 young people, couples, older people join that team as well. They go and will most likely work in the camp. What we do in camp, it varies from day to day. You might pass out some food. You might do crowd control. You might open gates, close gates, guard gates. You might be helping a sick refugee, caring for them. You might be cleaning toilets. You might be picking up trash. You never know what you're going to do over there. It's a humanitarian crisis. It changes. Sometimes, when I was there a year ago, they decided all of a sudden to only have men in camp. They took all the families, women and children out. Why? I have no idea. They decided that. So that changed how we go about our everyday work. We also have the women's ministry. There's also that in camp as well. There's a section designated for that. So if anyone is interested in that, feel free. You can get more information on that as well. We need coordinators. There's also administrative work. Shift coordinators, Oasis managers, Bible study leaders. I would say the Bible study leaders is a real need right now. We are branching out and, Lord willing, hoping to start on another island not far away called Chios. We have a small team going there just kind of start up and do Bible studies. So that is a new thing we are trying to do, and we want to keep it going. There's an incredible hunger from the refugees there on that island. All right, I have two videos that I would like to show yet. Are there any questions? If you think of some later, feel free to ask me. This is a young man. His name is Adnan. Incredible story. The video isn't the best quality, but I hope you're able to understand it and kind of get the gist of the story. He is a believer, came to Christ there on the island, and is living in Germany. He has a powerful testimony. Today, he's in contact with some of my friends, and he tells my friends of how he goes out and witnesses every day. And he's just hungering, thirsting after God's word and just reading it and reading it and reading it and going out and just preaching. And he's got a little band of people that he's praying with and working with, and I believe there's even a few other Christians there in that little band, and he's basically starting a little church. It's really incredible. And he's young, he's only like 19 or 20.
This changed my life. 2012, Enjoy that, not danger way.
But when I meet this He was there for 4 months, like he said. The last 3 days he was there, 3 days before he left, he got born again and baptized. Powerful, incredible. All right, one more video. This one's a bit shorter. This is about Isaiah 60. Someone put this together for us. Scriptures are from Isaiah 60, and you'll see that. Some of the verses in there. It's our heart, our desire to bring these people to the light. And we need men and women to rise up and do that. This isn't just about I-58. God is calling the church to rise up. You don't have to go to Greece. You can do it right here. You don't have to go to Greece to do it. You don't have to go to Turkey to do it. You can do it right here. And if you're not doing it here, chances are you probably won't do it over there. Here's the place to start.
time reaches fullness, when I move my hand, I will bring you home to your own place in a beautiful land.
Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we know that you are a good father. Many times we don't understand why you do what you do. But Lord, I pray that we would rise up and listen to your voice and say, yes, Jesus. It doesn't matter where I am. Step out in obedience and say yes. I would just like to ask you if you, I'm not looking for an emotional experience, but if God has spoken to you, and he wants you to obey, make that choice to say yes. I don't know where you're at. I don't know what you do every day. But God has called us to be the light, to shine our light wherever we go. God, I thank you for this congregation. I thank you for this church. God, I ask that your blessing would come upon this church. Your power would be known in this church, among these people. God, would you bring healing? Would you bring water to the dryness? Would you bring life to the dead bones? We ask that your power would be known. Ask for a relationship between the Father and us. Thank you that you are good. You are our Father. And you do all things well. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you very much for allowing me to present, bring awareness of reality to millions of people. I know that it's hard to comprehend. Once you experience it, once you're over there, you can understand a little bit more of what it's like. My plea to you is to, I know some of you can't go. God has called you to be here. But I believe God, some of you, maybe God has called some of you to go. Either way, rise and shine and fulfill that calling that he has placed on you. I'll turn the time over to Leroy. One thing I might want to mention is an opportunity to sponsor some of the refugees that we work with. There are several translators that have become Christians who help us in our Bible studies, translate with us in that. Some of them we provide lodging and food for them, just to kind of compensate for their work. So if anyone's interested in sponsoring the translators, talk to me. That's a need that we have if you can't go. So thank you all again, Leroy. There's a table back there, some literature, brochures. Feel free to take things off the table.
Thank you, Joe, for sharing.